but a lot of them have probably heard my remarks before. So welcome everyone to another meeting of FFPC. I'm Byron Huff, FFPC president. My pronouns are he, him, his. We're an association of gay, bi, and trans men. FFPCC was formed in 1996 and is a 501c3 entity, making your contributions tax deductible. We'd like everyone to mute your microphone, which David mentioned. Also, the meeting is recorded. Since formation, FFPC has raised more than $400,000. We'll be adjusting that based on the money that was just raised this year for scholarships that are awarded annually to high school seniors who have done significant things to reduce homophobia and educate about LGBTQ issues in their schools and communities. The $3,000 scholarships are awarded regardless of gender, gender identity, sexual orientation, or other protected characteristics. The real strength of the program, aside from recognizing and rewarding significant and often courageous acts of the recipients, is the opportunity for FFPC to send a representative to the high school graduation ceremonies throughout Iowa, often in front of an audience who thinks they have never seen a real live gay person. And believe it or not, there that still exists, especially in some rural areas. If you've not read the June newsletter, it was emailed on June 31st and available on our website, I would encourage you to open it and see the list of generous donors to our scholarship program, as well as articles we hope will be of interest to you. If you've not donated this year, I hope you will. You can make a one-time or set up a recurring donation on the website, ffbciowa.org, make sure it's .org, thanks to the technology funded by Brad Holland, Joe Rates, and Ascendant Wealth Management. You can designate FFPC as a beneficiary of United Way donations. You have to write it in, but it's pretty simple, and we do receive money periodically from the United Way. Amazon also offers an Amazon Smiles. It's just a separate website. If you just Google Amazon Smiles, you would be logging in that website versus just regular Amazon, and there's no difference. It's just their philanthropic way of giving back to the community, and you can designate that the donations go to FFPC, and it has no cost to you. Website, you'll find access to many links for resources. We continually adding content and adjusting what's in there. We archive monthly newsletters and audio recordings, and we're even adding YouTube videos of past speakers. That's in the beta stage. There's maybe only one or two there so far. David Cotton has been working on that for us. There's a new section on the homepage, FFPC Items of Interest. I believe it's right on the homepage. You'll find a link to some interesting things. And one that was just put out there was a link to Grain Rainbow podcast. It was created by Ginger Campbell. She was a previous FFPC speaker who has an interview with our board member, David Cotton. There is also a new survey from the Trevor Project, 2021 National Survey on LGBTQ Youth Mental Health, which highlights that 42% of LGBTQ youth seriously considered attempting suicide. So be sure to visit ffbciowa.org. Thank you, David Cotton, Nicholas Williams. I didn't notice if Nicholas is on the call this morning. Wade Peterson and Joe Rates for the many updates to the website. And thanks to David Cotton and Nicholas Williams for hosting our Zoom meeting. With the high FFPC rates of vaccinations, we expect to return to in-person meetings. Well, I'd like to give you a firm date. We have some logistics to work out because we want to be able to offer a virtual option for both the speaker and attendees. Keep in mind, when you receive the email invitation for the meeting, you can forward it to others to allow them to RSVP. They may appreciate the opportunity to hear one of our amazing speakers. And at this time, we would like to give new attendees of FFPC the opportunity to introduce themselves. We had this tradition during in-person meetings, and I just added it back at suggestion, and I know it's not quite the same as being in person, but if there's anyone would like to introduce themselves, please do so now.
Hi, I'm John Newsom. I live in Lindenhurst, Illinois, and friends with Byron, and I find I've been to two meetings so far, and I find them very informative. And so, hi.
Thank you. Good to see you, John. Your name on your video says your husband's name, Dan Blair, but I've known John and Dan for many years. We met them when we first moved to Chicago in 1998. So been a while. And they come back to Des Moines to visit, and we go to Chicago and visit them. So that's another advantage of having this virtual option. He's able to join us. Anyone else?
Good morning, everyone. My name's Kyle McKevely. I'm joining from Iowa City, Iowa. And it's my first time coming on here, and I'm excited to be here. So hello.
Okay. Hello, Kyle. Welcome.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay. I have a couple of announcements. Capital City Pride has events during June to celebrate Pride. Find them on Facebook or go to capitalcitypride.org to find the many planned activities. And they do have a lot going on. DSM Magazine just announced their 2021 LGBTQ Legacy Leader Awards, which spotlights leaders and role models across the state for their work in advancing equality for LGBTQ plus individuals and other civic organizations. Go to dsmmagazine.com to learn more. And our President Emeritus Jonathan Wilson was a recipient of that award about 2 years ago, I think. Right, Jonathan? Yep. Okay, he's shaking his head.
And we should say there are two of us who are here today, John Schmaker and me. We're both nominees this year.
Well, yes, thank you. Thank you for bringing that up, Randy. And it's a very, very prestigious award, and your contributions to the community are priceless and very welcome and needed, definitely needed. I have an announcement. I think Tim McMillan would like to make an announcement this morning.
Good morning, everybody. Good to see you all. Just wanted to mention that next month, you'll be hearing a little more about a period in history that's inspiring an upcoming work at Des Moines Metro Opera, that period being the Lavender Scare of the 1950s. And the opera in July being Fellow Travelers by Gregory Spears. The event that's a little more short term, however, is on June 15. We're happy at DMMO to be partnering with One Iowa. And beginning on the 11th of June, there's a documentary called The Lavender Scare that's available free of charge. But it's not available on Netflix or Hulu, so there's actually the added step of needing to register to receive the link and the password in order to view it. And then Courtney Reyes, our friend at One Iowa, is hosting a panel discussion on the evening of June 15 at 7 o'clock. And so all of that information, as well as a few other community engagement events leading up to the performance of Fellow Travelers, are on a website. If you're interested in registering for that information, as I mentioned, everything except the performance at Hoyt Sherman Theater will be free of charge. And so that website is DesMoinesMetroOpera.org. And if you just at the end add a /lavender, you'll come to the landing page that has the registration for that. You would, by registering for the Lavender Scare, receive not only the link to the documentary, but also the Zoom link to the panel discussion, which is completely virtual on the 15th of June as well. So thanks much, and we'll look forward to next month and hearing a little more about that period of history. But if you'd like to become expert in it before next month, there's a great opportunity, and it's a fantastic film. More people need to see it, so I'm hoping that you'll join us.
Well, thank you, Tim. I did want to ask, you said it's on DesMoinesMetroOpera.org and then /lavender. Is it also on One Iowa? Is it part of their Pride listing of events?
One Iowa will also be cross-promoting on Facebook and all such things, but the one place to get the link is actually being funneled through DMMO's website. So in order to register for getting that email that has the links, you'll want to, depending on where you click, it should take all roads should lead back to that landing page.
Okay. I just wanted to understand that because I thought maybe it was tied in with that. But thank you very much. I think that the lavender scare has to do with the, let's see, what it was back, what era was that when they,
McCarthy when the era, 1950s, McCarthy. When being employed by the government was, meant that you could not even have the suspicion of being, LGBTQ or you would be immediately dismissed as, someone who was easily corruptible and blackmailed. And so it really is a fascinating and perhaps not well enough known about period of history. So great to see both a documentary and an opera that takes its primary story from that particular era.
Yes. Thank you. And our July speaker, who I'll mention later, is going to be talking about that topic. Have another announcement. I am trying to keep up on what other organizations are doing and the Trevor Project. So they're partnering with Procter & Gamble, P&G, big company, and iHeartMedia come together for a star-studded, it's called Can't Cancel Pride, virtual relief benefit for the LGBTQ plus community. So it's hosted by Elvis Duran and Bebe Rexha. I probably know some of these people, but I have trouble pronouncing their names. We'll feature performances from Brothers Osborne, Busy Phillips, Demi Lovato, Gus Kenworthy, Haley Kyoto, Jennifer Hudson, JoJo Siwa, Little Nas X, who has some very risque videos. A couple of them, MJ Rodriguez, Nina West, Pink, Ricky Martin, and more. Rexha, so that's why I think I know this person. They'll be taking the stage, they'll be hosting, but also their song Sacrifice. The one-hour benefit special produced by iHeart and iHeartMedia and P&G will stream tonight at 8 p.m. Central Time. Go to prideradio.com to learn more for the best options to watch because there's multiple. And it will also be available to stream on demand. So if you aren't able to watch it this evening, this evening, you will be able to find a way to watch it. So it could be very, very entertaining. And it's a great way to recognize Pride Month. Now, let's see, the newsletter, again, was distributed May 31st to everyone's FFBC email. You can see the newsletter on our website, ffbciowa.org, but please provide your email to info@ffbciowa.org if you would like to receive our newsletters, meeting invitations, and other communications. The next copy deadline for our newsletter is the second Monday prior to the breakfast meeting, so the next deadline will be June 21st. If you have something you'd like to share, send a copy to info@ffbciowa.org for inclusion in the newsletter. Our next virtual board meeting will be Tuesday, July 6th, this next Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. Central Time. Please let me know if you'd like to participate, and I'll get you the Zoom information. And now, John Chaplin will be introducing our speaker. You can post comments unmute your mic, after this is done, we'll allow questions, but you can post some comments as it's going, and then at the end of the presentation, the speaker can address those, and you'll be able to ask questions at the end. John Chaplin,
good morning.
Make the introduction.
Our speaker today is Reverend James Conrad, or Pastor Jim, as he's known to his congregants at Townview Baptist Church, where he's served as pastor since January 1994. He was licensed as a pastor in 1978 and was recognized and authorized as an ordained minister on October 18, 1981, by Fifth Avenue Baptist Church in Rome, Georgia. He holds an MDiv, which is a Master of Divinity, in Pastoral Ministries from Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky, and a Bachelor of Arts degree with a double major in Religion and History from Shorter College in Rome, Georgia. He served a number of churches in the roles of pastor, associate pastor, or youth minister. He was adjunct instructor in religion at Shorter University from 1991 to 2012. He has also served the Georgia Baptist Convention on the Credentials Committee and the Executive Committee. He is involved in the wider community through mentoring programs, advisory committees, and character education programs. He is chaplain to the North Paulding High School men's basketball team. His spouse is Priscilla, who is a licensed professional counselor. Their children are Andrew, Thomas, Stephen, and Elizabeth, and a bunch of grandkids, as we just heard. We look forward to hearing his story of how he came to practice what he preached in regard to a message of love and acceptance. So, Pastor Jim, the pulpit is yours, and welcome this morning.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity to share with you this journey for me and for our church has been an unexpected one. There were a number of things that I could prepare myself for along the way. One of the things I was not prepared for was the response to our story. I am pastor of a church of about 200 members in Kennesaw, Georgia, which is on the northwest side of Metro Atlanta's suburbs. If you take I-75 from Atlanta towards Chattanooga, you'll drive right past Kennesaw. I never in my wildest dreams would have imagined that I would end up talking to reporters from USA Today and Slate Magazine and the Associated Press and CNN and the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, that I would have done radio interviews with the largest gay news outlet in Miami, to have been on NPR, or to join you folks in Des Moines, Iowa. Along the way, we have received dozens. No, I hate to sound like a preacher. Probably hundreds, though. I think I can say that of emails and notes and cards and letters and phone calls and Facebook messages offering us encouragement and support from around the country and even around the world. By the way, I did one interview with a reporter in France. She emailed me questions and I replied back. Our only problem is her article is published in French and we don't have anybody in church that can translate it for us. So we're still working on that. There were a few crank responses along the way, which would be expected. But to hear very personal stories, there are too many of them that began, "I'm a former Baptist," or "I'm a former believer," who, because of their mistreatment and lack of acceptance by the church, have walked away from their faith. Support from folks who are not believers, who believe that a message of welcome and hospitality is what church should be about, even if they don't participate in church. Some stories very painful. A mother whose email began, "Thank you for what you have done. My 19-year-old son died by suicide last year, and I can remember the times when the pastor would begin to judge homosexuals and he would quietly get up and leave the sanctuary." Just heart-rending stories. But overall, it has been a message of hope. And I hope that beyond what we can do in our own church and the impact that we can have in our own community, that is, our story has been shared so widely in the media that it has offered hope to LGBTQ persons who, you know, maybe living in some little town somewhere where there's not a church where they would feel welcomed, that maybe they can have the hope that one day there will be. Two churches that have struggled with this issue and put it off and put it off and put it off, that maybe they can be encouraged that if this little church in Kennesaw could do this, then maybe we could take this step. It all started for us, with people, with a real live family. And as I look at why did our church's story gain such traction, I think that that was a big part of it. You know, my personal journey, I grew up in South Florida. The churches that I attended were very conservative Southern Baptist churches. excuse me. The only message I heard was that homosexuality was sinful and an abomination to God. End of story. There was really no discussion of it. I went to college and began to encounter for the first time, you know, and this was late 70s, early 80s, folks who were openly gay, and they didn't seem to be the really strange, weird, perverted people that I had been told that they were. But I still understood this to be a lifestyle choice and that it wasn't an appropriate choice for a Christian. And then as time went on and I began to encounter more people and do more reading, I began to encounter folks who were both openly gay and open about their faith. And this put me in a conundrum because I had never been able to put those two together. So that was my personal struggle. I decided along the way that I didn't know enough to bully and bash from the pulpit. You know, growing up in South Florida during the Anita Bryant times, some of y'all will remember those. And I even then as a teenager wondered if homosexuality was a sin, why was it condemned so much more loudly than any other sin? Just seemed a bit incongruous to me. When the Pulse nightclub shooting occurred in Orlando, that was on a Saturday night. The next morning was Father's Day. And I tend not to have my preaching dictated by the current news cycle, because otherwise you're preaching the news all the time and I'm committed to preaching scriptures. But that morning, I sort of changed gears about 2/3 of the way through my Father's Day sermon to talk about the fathers who were waking up to that Father's Day, grieving the death of children who died simply because they were gay, and encouraged our congregation that if we did nothing else, that we had to stop the voices of hate and counter the message of harm. And then 2 years ago, this past May, I was in New Orleans on a mission trip. And that Monday morning, our associate had preached on Sunday morning. I opened my email and there was a letter from a message from a guy named John saying that he had visited our church, found the service encouraging and the associate pastor's message helpful. And he said, I'm gay. And my partner and I have adopted 3 boys and they're our family. And I can't imagine us being anything any different. And we're looking for a church where our children can grow up with the same kinds of experiences in church that we did. He and his partner grew up in Indiana in very conservative, even more conservative, kinds of Baptist out there than Southern Baptist churches. And they wanted their boys in Sunday school and they wanted them to learn the great truths of the Bible and to make personal commitments to Christ. That was their experience in worship. And he finished his email by saying, would my family and I be welcome in your church? I'd never had anyone ask me that in all my years of ministering. So I said, I'd love to talk with you, not the kind of conversation I'd like to have. I like to have over the phone or an email. Could we meet? And so the following Sunday after church, we met, and he told me more and more of he and his partner's story. And as the conversation went on, I said, well, you know, quite honestly, John, we've not been here before. I know of two other occasions where we've had someone, who I knew was gay, worship with us. I'm sure there have been other times that there have been gay and lesbian participants in worship that we didn't know. So why don't we take some time, let you guys continue to worship with us, see how you feel, how our folks respond. When you're ready, we'll get you involved in a small group Bible study, Sunday school on Sunday morning for the boys and for you and John, knowing that when we went from two guys in a room of 180 to two guys in a room of 12, that things would become somewhat more apparent. If you continue to sense the Spirit's leadership, then let's talk more, because membership is something that would require some church action. And I want us to be, I would need to do my homework on that. And so we started that process. Along the way, another partnered couple came to worship with us, driving 45 minutes to come to church with us on Sunday morning, because it was the closest church where they felt like they could be at least welcomed, even though at that point we had not taken any official stance. And so I started reading and I started praying, because we had never been here before. When John asked me, would my family be welcome in your church? I went through one of those moments, and you've probably experienced them, where in a split second you play out a number of scenarios. I cannot remember the name of the book, but Malcolm Gladwell has written a book about all that informs those seemingly instant decisions that we make. Because in that split second when he asked me, I realized that I could say no. I could say, no, we're just not ready for that. But you are welcome to continue to participate in worship. Just stay quiet. Or I could have said, no, let me help you find a church that would welcome you. But I knew that none of those options in my heart was the right one, and that it was time for me and for our congregation to have the conversation. Two books that I would recommend, that I found particularly helpful out of the close to a dozen that I read that summer. One was by an author named Matthew Vines, God and the Gay Christian. The other is a book entitled Changing Our Mind by ethicist David Gushy. If you encounter a friend who is struggling with reconciling faith and sexual identity, very helpful books. One of the things I found with John and John is that the stereotype that, even though I consider myself to be a fairly broad-minded person, the stereotype was that to be gay meant you were liberal. And many are, that's fine, but John and John grew up in a conservative church environment and were looking for a more conservative church environment. They were conservative theologically and politically and socially. Big John was a hospital administrator. He said, my being gay at work is not an issue, but if I ever talk politics, it would create a ruckus. Another stereotype shattered for me. And all I could say to him was, we've not been here before. Be patient with us. We're going to screw it up, you know, so let us know if we say something wrong, do something wrong, and help us to do better. Through that summer, we went through our decision-making process in our church. Our deacon fellowship serves as our membership committee. I ended up making a recommendation to them that we develop a welcoming statement. They approved it, not unanimously, but by a substantial margin. And immediately the opposition started a phone call campaign and had secret meetings and things that I had never encountered in 40 years of ministry. Ultimately, I was brought into a meeting where I was lambasted for a period of time. And I said, this is the sermon that I will be preaching this Sunday. And that sermon shared my personal journey and ultimately the recommendation that I would make to our church council, that I think I can still recite it, recognizing that there are a variety of understandings of human sexuality and faith. It is the position of Townview Baptist Church that anyone who can profess faith in Jesus and upon that profession be baptized would be welcomed as a member of our church, regardless of sexual orientation or gender identity. When I read that statement in the sermon, I normally don't preach from a manuscript, but this was a sermon that I wanted to have be very careful about what I said. About a half dozen people got up and walked out. It was really a very poorly organized walkout. They were in the back of the sanctuary, so nobody really except me saw them. If they had asked me, how can we do a walkout in church, I would have helped them and they could have sat down front and then everyone could have seen them, you know, make their march to the back door. In writing the sermon, and I normally don't let my wife read what I'm going to preach, but I felt again, and I had a line in the sermon that I said, I feel in some ways like this is my coming out. And Priscilla said, Jim, you can't say that. And I said, well, why not? She said, people aren't going to understand. But I realized in some ways, in some small way, it was my coming out because I didn't know how folks were going to respond. I could anticipate that there would be some confusion, some rejection. There was a very real possibility that I could have lost my job, that friends would have stopped calling. And I experienced all those things. I kept my job. I took a 30% pay cut because when 30% of our people left, they took a substantial portion of our budget with them. But we ended up by a 70%+ majority approving that recommendation, which even though a number of people left, that meant the vast majority of our congregation was willing to say, yes, this is the kind of church that we want to be, the kind of church and the kind of message that we believe that our community needs. A couple of weeks later, John and John came forward for membership. A couple of weeks after that, John and Ed came. The Sunday morning of our vote, you know, we baptized new members who wanted to be baptized so they could, but we're a Baptist church. We vote on everything. I don't know what your, what, if any church traditions you come from, but in our church, the congregation makes those kinds of decisions. We knew that in doing that, that the Southern Baptist Convention, that we were outside the bounds of their membership requirements. But we moved on. And in December, 2 days before Christmas, I received an email from the Southern Baptist Convention Executive Committee saying that we had been reported and were under investigation. Would we please send, you know, any documents? And I did. First of the year, you know, we felt like, okay, we're on our feet. We're going to make it through this. And then do y'all remember what happened sort of in around March of 2020? Yeah, COVID hit. And I thought, really, God, you know, we've done this and now, you know, in less than 72 hours, we move from an in-person worship format, to a fully online format. What we found over that summer was people finding us that would have never worshiped with us at first in person. Among them were a number of LGBTQ persons who checked us out online and began worshiping with us. A transgender person who came while she was transitioning, which is unusual. But the first Sunday that she came, as she said, the first place she went, as she says, as her new self, presenting fully female, she came to church, came to our little church because she felt like she would be safe and welcomed. My 22-year-old daughter said, "Dad, I am proud that you have used your position of power and influence for good, as only a young millennial can say." So yeah, we've welcomed six more new LGBTQ members and a number of folks worshiping with us every week. Through the pandemic, when we began offering in-person worship, our most faithful worshipers were members of the LGBTQ plus community. And I think they were just starving for community and for a place where they could worship and be welcomed. And they were there every Sunday. We had a lesbian couple to come that first Sunday after it hit the news that the SBC would be kicking us out. And in tears after the service, we were talking in the narthex, and Nancy said to me, "I was raised Southern Baptist, Nola was raised Roman Catholic, and it's been too long since we've been able to be in church." On Mother's Day, they had their four sons with them in church, and I said, "Guys, I don't know what it took. I don't know what it took for your moms to get you all here together on Mother's Day, but I know it made their day that you were with them in church on Mother's Day, and I know how much your moms appreciate that." And after church, I thought, oh my gosh, here in Sunday morning on Mother's Day, I was acknowledging two moms and their family, how far I've come, how far our church has come. We're still not going to get it right all the time, and I pray for patience. You know, I've told our folks, it's not our nature. You know, we're probably never going to fly a pride flag in our narthex or sponsor a float in the City of Kennesaw Pride Parade, which, by the way, will never happen. The Pride Parade in Kennesaw, that's not the kind of town Kennesaw is. But we are here now, and people know, our position of welcome. And, you know, we are better for it as a congregation, to meet John and John and their family, to meet Brockton and Skylar, a young partnered couple in their 20s, deep, deep, strong in their faith, who can now, as Brockton said, "For the first time, I could take Holy Communion as my real self," and to walk with them as they continue to experience rejection by their family. You know, I've learned through this that there is no such thing as local news anymore. You know, the ripple spread across the country and around the world. I think that big picture denominations that require agreement on everything are going to face a very difficult future, because the Southern Baptist Convention can kick out churches like ours, but they will still have gay sons and daughters in their churches that will continue to experience rejection even though they keep going. As was mentioned earlier in the announcements, the suicide rate of LGBTQ individuals as adolescents is alarming, and unfortunately the church has been complicit in that. So that's been our journey. My hunch is, in looking at this, you know, group of 30 or so people, that some of you have experienced parts of that journey. Our message is a message of hope and love. We believe that when John 3:16 says that God loved the world so much, that the world means all of us. That's the scriptural lens that I read the Bible through. We reached our position not because we don't believe the Bible, but because we do. And, you know, we want to offer that message of hope to everyone that we can. So anyway, I've rambled. I don't know if I got anywhere near the direction that I was asked to take, but I love telling our story, and I appreciate you folks listening. And any questions, thoughts, comments?
Excuse me, Pastor, I have to say that this is the most inspiring story I have heard in a very long time. And thank you so much for what you do. It gives me hope.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Oh, and by the way, when John did that very generous introduction, none of the organizations that he mentioned would welcome me back. Now, the churches that sanctioned my ministry, the institutions that granted me my diplomas, the only one is the North Paulding High School basketball team. I'm still chaplain there, but that's because my son is the head coach.
I think it's, you know, especially for those of us who are older, we all have had those experiences in church where we were not welcomed or where we went for comfort and companionship, found ourselves rejected. And to see the changes and to see churches that are now becoming more welcoming and welcoming congregations, and stories such as what you have said is such an encouragement, especially for young people, that they feel like they have somebody that can support them and still be able to worship with people who have share their beliefs. Tears come to my eyes when I think of my times and what I was taught and felt in my youth and 20s and teens and 20s. And to see that young people have churches such as yours that they can go and receive support is just so encouraging. I can't express how much that means to people.
I had a young man come to me that summer, getting ready to head off to college, never met him before. And he asked if he could speak with me. And within 10 minutes, he was broken down and in tears, sharing his journey of loving God, but knowing that he was gay. And the only message that he'd heard in the church was that God hates fags. And he couldn't bring those two things together. I'd never been there before. And so we talked and I listened and hugged him and we met again. And as we met again and we're finishing up, I said to him, God made you the way that you are and God loves you the way that you are. And he looked up and he said, no one has ever told me that before. And then I swallowed deep and said, to be honest with you, I've never told anyone that before. So for me, it came to recognizing that, you know, sexuality is not a choice. I met too many people that just wasn't the experience. And so the quandary as a person of faith was, if they're born this way, did God make a mistake? And that didn't fit with my theology. And so I finally had to come to a point to say that, okay, if 3 to 5% of the population, which is somewhere in there is the best number I can come up with, is not straight, then God, for God's purposes and in God's creative diversity, made them that way. And so we should welcome and celebrate them as we would anyone else, with the way that the uniqueness that God created them with, and welcome them and their gifts into our church fully. Not to say you can be here, but don't say anything. There are too many churches that operate still with a don't ask, don't tell policy. We know you're gay, but just don't make a deal out of it. You know, I'm familiar with folks who have been actively involved in their churches until they posted on Facebook a picture of them with their partner, and then were asked to no longer hand out bulletins on Sunday morning, that somehow they could still come and they could still give their money. But we can't let you be in any sort of leadership. We couldn't do that. We just couldn't.
Jonathan, I think you had a question.
Yes, Reverend Conrad, I was the one who interfaced with you in the first place and obtained the commitment to speak this morning. And I want to thank you very much for your willingness to do this. the role that you have played has been a very powerful one. And it will continue to be a struggle for the Southern Baptist Church and a number of other churches as well. I grew up as the son of a minister in the Methodist Church. My dad's deceased now, but I have a retired Methodist minister sister who is still actively involved in church stuff. And the Methodist Church has got a different kind of challenge, I think.
Oh, they've still got their struggles to come. Yes,
they have their struggles to come. And one of the factors that is complicating it is that the congregations don't own the church. They don't own the property. But I had understood perhaps that is not the case with your church, that your congregation actually has ownership of the church and the property. Is that correct?
Yes. And in Baptist polity, it's not connectional. Each individual church is autonomous. We own our own property, can call our own ministers. That's why the Southern Baptist Convention, they can't revoke my ordination. They didn't ordain me. Someone said, well, what will it do when we're no longer a Southern Baptist church? Quite honestly, they won't let us go to their meetings anymore and they won't take our money. So we will find other Baptists that we can associate with for common ministry and invest our missions money in folks that we can work with. We don't have to agree with them on everything, but if they work with us, our buildings, our property are owned by us and the bank. They couldn't take that from us.
How about pension? Does the Southern Baptist Convention have a pension for the pastors in the various churches?
It is not required. I have participated in their annuity program and will have to transfer to another annuity program because a requirement is that I be employed by a Southern Baptist church. And so once we are officially, which will happen next week in Nashville, no longer a Southern Baptist church, then I will not be able to participate in that annuity program.
I assume, though, that you are vested in whatever is in that program, and you can take it out. You can transfer it out. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. That's another complication that the Methodists are having to deal with, is not just the lack of ownership of the property, but their clergy will compromise or potentially compromise their pensions.
Well, and I'll tell you, folks, church life isn't that much different than any other places of controversy. Follow the money.
Yeah. Am I muted? I forget. I'm not muted. Okay. Yeah. It seems sad that the politics of been intertwined with religion, and you can look back at the history and how that happened, but I don't believe it's been good for the church. Can you just talk about that, of how politics is poisoned religion?
The problem with church and government is whenever they get too intertwined, it's always the church that loses ultimately. We've certainly seen that in our nation in the last 30 years, the evangelical denominations, the Southern Baptist Convention have become more and more aligned, with the right wing of the Republican Party, in some ways a response to the last half of the 20th century when it was the liberal Protestant churches that were pretty closely aligned with liberal mainline congregations in politics. But it's brought us to a point that we can only associate with people that we agree with totally, that we listen to the same news sources, we read the same books, we go to churches where everybody looks the same, thinks the same, votes the same. And when you live in that kind of echo chamber, I don't personally care if it's a right wing or a left wing echo chamber. It still limits your ability to learn from others. I try my best not to see anyone as an opponent, but someone that I can learn from. and that I can have a liberal friend or a very conservative friend and hopefully learn from them and love them in spite of our differences. But that's tough when, you know, we reduce things to name calling. My biggest disappointment in the way the process worked out at our church was that I had hoped that after 25 years, we could have at least had a conversation about this, that my idea of big tent would have somehow taken hold. But the reality was, as soon as the topic was raised, that 30% was gone. They didn't want to talk about it. They didn't want to have any conversation or open themselves up to the possibility of reading the Bible, in new ways or of learning from people. And that hurt because I had hoped that we could have done it differently. And I think politically right now, everything is so defined by the extremes. There is very little middle ground. And in churches, that's happening too, except in church, we can throw out heretic, or unbeliever, which I've been called a couple of times and that stings. It's one of those things we all know. You can have 100 affirmations, but it's the one criticism that the barb seems to stick. But I think the church, I'll never tell our people how to vote, who to vote. I will tell them to vote. But I'm not going to tell them how to vote. I hope that we have informed their faith in a way that they can vote faithfully. But it's not the role of the church to lose its voice, and to lose its ability to influence by getting so wrapped up in a political party or a political agenda.
Okay, Pastor Conrad, I'm among the many who have a sordid history with the church in my own life. And that's a several-page essay, so I won't get into that right now. But it seems to me that there's nothing more grassroots than a person's ability to love and freely associate. And so I think it's small congregations like yours that in the long run are going to make the difference in the large organizations of the church. I think you could think of your small congregation as David. Southern Baptist Convention is Goliath. And it's going to take some time, but sooner or later, the grassroots of our Christian churches across the country are the ones that are going to make the difference. So that's just a comment. There's no question there, but thank you for the work you've done.
Well, and that's where it's getting to know people. You know, John and their three boys were the first same-sex parent family that I had encountered. And 10 years ago, I could have given you all the arguments for why same-sex couples should not be allowed to adopt children. But I got to know them and I asked someone the homosexual lifestyle. And I said, what is the homosexual lifestyle? For John and John, it's two minivans in a suburban garage trying to get their three boys to school and to ball practice and to church activities. You know, that's their gay lifestyle. Kim is the first transgender person I've ever known on a personal basis. I've met other transgender individuals, but she's my first transgender friend. And so by getting to know each other, we make the worst decisions at any level when we make them out of fear, which I think in large part can explain the results of the 2016 election, and churches and individuals. When we're afraid, we tend to not make our best decisions. What I'm finding is, as I get to know people who are different from me, whatever the difference is, I've got a lot more in common with them than I have differences, and I really don't need to be afraid of them. I can welcome them, and I can love them.
Yes, thank you. We're about out of time, I think. Maybe one more. Jonathan, did you have one more question?
Really, it was somewhat of a comment. You said several times when you first were speaking to us about saying to, for example, John and John, you said, be patient with us. We may screw this up from time to time, and we need to learn from you how or what was hurtful, but be patient. And I've, in looking at my own, reflecting on my own coming out process, it taught me patience for other people. It took me so long. I need to be patient with other people until they can come along too. And I think that patience piece, if you just give it time, education and exposure and interaction with real people, changes minds. And I think what you've done with your church and what your church has had the courage to do, is about as powerful a Christian, message and testimony that I can think of. If there is anything that's going to be Christian, it is that example. Thank you again.
Yes. Thank you very much. The very, very powerful presentation, Jim. We thank you so much for joining us. We're all human, and getting to know each other makes us understand and be more tolerant of our differences. Your evidence that education is important to debunking stereotypes that people have for LGBTQ people. You've shown that inclusion of everyone has a benefit for any church, both for the church and you personally. Politics and religion should be separate, as was written in our Constitution. Jim, I don't think you should say never about a pride parade in your town, though. I think you've shown that never is maybe not a good word. Probably you, if you look past in your past, you never would have thought you would be where you are today.
Oh my gosh. One of my oldest sons said, Dad, when did you become the liberal? Because he knows that I'm not. He said, this is the message you've been preaching all of your ministry here. We've always said all are welcome, but we had this invisible asterisk, and all we did was bring life to the asterisk and then take it away. And so now when we say, as we say in the South, y'all are welcome, we mean y'all, and include all.
Well, our breakfast meetings and the scholarship program are educational, as we help others understand LGBTQ people deserve inclusion and equality. Just like bringing you here as our speaker, even though you're still on a journey of learning, I would hope that coming here and presenting this morning brought you further in that journey. And us hearing you speak helps us understand where the church is coming from and their reasons, and we would hope we can change minds. There were a couple of books you mentioned, and if you're interested in those, it was hard to get it down. David Cotton is gracious to put links in the chat. So look at the chat, hit your chat button, and you'll see all the links. And there's three little dots at the bottom, at least on my screen, bottom right corner. You hit that, you can save the chat. It saves it to a text file on your computer. But there's a link to the books that you mentioned, Changing Our Mind and God and the Gay Christian. And then there's also links there for the other things we talked about, the Des Moines Metro Opera, Lavender, and Pride Radio thing that's tonight, the fundraiser. Let's see, reminder, yes. So go to capitalcitypride.org for the activities this month, the Trevor Project, prideradio.com, and the Des Moines Metro Opera, the Lavender. So that's the documentary online free of charge from June 11th through the 17th. And there's a virtual panel discussion on the 15th that features Des Moines community reflecting on worst workplace discrimination still occurring today, and moderated by Courtney Reyes of One Iowa. Say the date for fellow travelers, July 17th, and that would be at Des Moines Metro Opera.org. Upcoming speakers, July 2nd, we will have Kevin Newberry, who has done extensive research into the Lavender Scare and is this neglected period in American history. He developed a new opera, Fellow Travelers, based on that learning and around Thomas Mallon's book of the same name. August 6th will be Ian Lawrence Trejo. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that right. Pronouns are he, him, who is director of the BI Foundation and founder of the AMBI Network, a growing international collaborative of a socially focused BI communities. As an activist, he's particularly interested in the role positive, affirming support networks we can serve as health and human rights intervention for BI people. In 2013, Ian created BI.org, which has grown to become the largest online resource about bisexuality in the world. Did not even know about that at all. And gay people, we have our own stereotypes about bi people. So we all have things to learn. So again, save the chat if there's things you'd like to hear. Any last comments? I think we're about done with the meeting. We're a little bit past 8 o'clock. Anyone is welcome to stay on and chat if they'd like, but the meeting is now adjourned. Thank you everyone for joining us and have a great weekend.
Thank you, Reverend Jim. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Courage and leadership is appreciated.
Oh, I see Nicholas is on the call. I said I didn't know if you were there. Oh, John just sent me a message from Chicago. He loved the speaker this morning, so he was glad he could join us.